This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, we're previewing UFC St. Louis. Louis versus Nascimento. Shall we?
Let's go!
Let's do this. Let's do the thing. Let's see how AJ's technical issues are tonight. Have they resolved themselves? I mean, they're kind of... You can see what's going on with AJ. We'll fix AJ's deal. We'll fix AJ one day.
That's what she said. Listen, it's Saint Louis, I'll see. C'est pas Saint Louis. Saint Louis. That's the real name of it at first, Matt. The French went down there and then they call it Saint Louis. They call it Saint Louis.
It's Missouri, though. Missouri. You say Missouri or Missouri?
I say Missouri.
You say Missouri.
Missouri, I know the miserable.
Yeah. You are miserable.
Not as much as Art Jimmonson. Poor guy, man.
My God. Zepini. First of all, say his name right. Second of all, that's a hell of a segue. Jeez.
I said his name right, Art.
What? You said Jimmonson.
Jimmerson, man.
I think I rest in peace, pioneer of the UFC, Art Jimmerson. That's what AJ is talking about. Art Jimmerson passing away. He was pretty young, too, right? He wasn't like an old guy.
60 years old.
60?
He was 60, man. Yeah, man. It's ridiculous.
It was a heart attack, from what I understand.
I don't know what he died of, but he passed away at 60, man. He's like he was a huge icon of like the UFC, man, especially UFC 1 when he came in with that one glove. And he went to fight, and man, that was the biggest mistake he ever made. But, you know, the guy was iconic. You know, I remember watching that fight and seeing this guy coming in, and he was a pretty ranked boxer at the time. And I was like, man, he's coming in with one glove. He figured he can, like, grab the neck, or I don't know what he was thinking with that non-glove, and just started, like, maybe rock him, sock him style. That was probably his, like, you know, tactic to get into that fight, but it didn't work for him at all once he got taken down to the ground.
Yeah.
But man, it's sad to see that he passed away at a very young age.
Yes. Art Jimmerson, he was in the first ever UFC, the first UFC. A lot of people might not know, AJ, right? Like, people may not know how the UFC started, and people may think that the UFC kind of always existed in its current format, but the first ever UFC and the first few UFC shows were tournaments just to figure out what fighting style, what martial art was the best in a no-rules, extreme cage match combat. And in the first round, Art Jimmerson, who was a boxer, decided to wear one boxing glove and then have a free hand for grappling or whatever, because there were no MMA gloves. There was no uniform for mixed martial arts. It wasn't even called mixed martial arts at the time. It was called no holds barred, really. It was, I think that's NHB, right? NHB at the time, I guess in Brazil, they were calling it Vale Tudo, which basically means, you know, anything goes.
No rules.
So we had Art Jimmerson in the first round, unfortunately for him, going up against Royce Gracie. And I think a lot of people know the name Royce Gracie, who went on to win that first UFC tournament and really cement the legacy of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, and kind of show the world, like, hey, there's this thing that you can do. If you're smaller than the other guy, you could beat him in a fight. And people are like, wow, how do you do that? And that really kind of opened the door for modern-day MMA and martial arts, really, as we know it, right? I mean, AJ, you were you were, I mean, I was a child at the time, right? But you were a martial arts practitioner and you were kind of a young adult, I guess, when the UFC was starting. So you have
I was a young guy. But I'm going to tell you something.
Right, but
I
you were like there, a... I was there. I'm not trying to age you, AJ. I'm just trying to get your... I'm
listen,
trying to
I'm
get your perspective.
You,
I'm just trying to get your perspective on what the UFC was for you. Like, as a guy who did martial arts, I know you did kung fu, you
big.
Did boxing,
it was
right?
Big.
But when you saw...
I was doing... Yeah?
Right, but when you saw Royce Gracie and when you saw Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, what did you think when you first saw it? As a guy who was already practicing martial arts, like, what was your impression of what Royce did to Art Jimerson? Like, because at the time, a lot of people felt boxing was the supreme fighting sport. It was the best art, and a boxer would pretty much beat anybody. People would say boxer versus, you know, wrestler, Olympic wrestler. How would that go? And, you know, there were questions there, but a lot of people felt that boxers were the best. And then here comes a guy in a gi. Right, he's wearing like the karate suit that a lot of people associated with karate, but it's a jiu-jitsu gi, and Royce was wearing that, and all of a sudden he's choking people from his back with his legs. It's something that the world, you know, at large hadn't really seen before. So for me as a kid, I kind of was aware of it, but I wasn't like that. I mean, I was very young. In 1993, when this happened, I'm like 7, 8 years old, right? So I'm not super aware of the UFC and what's going on, but you're a little bit older than I am, so you have a better, you know, you could kind of remember those early days a little bit better than me.
Well, I want to tell you something, Dan. It wasn't just about that. I was there. So I saw the build-up to this thing before it started. And I don't know you guys here in Montreal that wanted to get to the UFC to be in that ring. And, I mean, I you know, when I saw it, My all I wanted to do was, as a young practitioner, I wanted to be there. I was so determined that I was going to make my way to that octagon. But the thing is this, is that you got to understand what the buildup was. Because back then, the martial arts scene was very, like, divided. If you were a kung fu guy, a judo guy, a wrestling guy, a boxing guy, karate guy. Even within karate and kung fu, it depends which style you come from. There was a lot of rivalry, man. And I'm telling you, it was massive because everybody was going to prove that they were studying the best martial art. You had the Jeet Kune Do guys. You had, you name it, the Salat guys. It was crazy. So many disciplines, including the Tai Chi masters that were, like, which went in there as well and said, like, you know, we're going to, like, win this. And let me tell you, the buildup was humongous.
Wow.
And when I went to see it live, which was up on St. Laurent Street, it was packed crowd. People couldn't come in. The streets were literally packed, you know, just to be able to see this show. And you got to remember, there wasn't too many places showing it. It was one place, really. But it was so well known. People were doing everything they can to see who was going to be the top martial artist. So I was there. I was lucky because I knew guys that I was training with, and I was up, and, you know, we were in there watching this. And it was like, I still remember yesterday, you know, the whole logo that came in and the hype, and everybody didn't know what to expect. The announcers, it was just like everything was new. You know, everything was new, but these are some of the oldest styles in the world. And here we are. Now it's not the movies. This is real. And the way it opened up, man, was ridiculous. You had the sumo wrestlers and you had that. And then you had this guy named Royce Gracie coming in, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I knew him. A bit about that, you know, about Rickson and all that kind of stuff. Like, I heard about it.
Okay.
I didn't realize how deadly, it was till UFC 1 ended, and then UFC 2 made people start thinking twice, and 3 and 4, and then you just keep hearing Royce Gracie. And just to let a lot of people know that Royce Gracie was chosen not because he was the best member of the Gracie clan. In fact, he was the one that was probably the least experienced, and the one that they said that we're going to take the last guy in our family is going to beat the best in the world. Because at that time, man, they had killers all the way up to Hino himself. And they took Royce Gracie, the weakest link, I hate to say it in that way, to go fight for the family. That shows you how much confidence that family had. to represent themselves. And there was a lot on their back too, because, you know, there was some involvement in that UFC one just to prove how good the Gracies were.
Yeah.
And that day when Royce Gracie came out with his gi, I think he was about 160 pounds or 100. Like, he was nothing. People are looking at that guy and they're like, this karate guy is going to get killed by the boxer. I was there, man, and I wasn't sure. I was like, man, something about this guy, though. And when he came in with the line, the famous Gracie line, one after another, I think as a young guy watching that, I was like, what the hell, man? There was something, man. And I can only tell you this, is that there was something that I saw in that line making its way to the ring where I'm like, who is this guy? People are like, well, he's a karate guy. This is a guy. He's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. What is that? The dance stuff? You know, they got it mixed up with capoeira that actually was in there as well in the UFC. And let me tell you, Dave, the hype that was there was so crazy, man. You know, I can't even explain it. It was like, nobody experienced that before, right? No one's experienced
that. Yeah, well, that's it. That's it.
Crazy martial artists. Listen, I had guys that were in there were killers in the streets of Montreal because I knew them. Like, they were a lot older than me. But we're talking like some tough dudes that worked for some, you know, different organizations that were there to watch this. And when Royce Gracie, man, you know, he beat Art. And Art had that one hand. Thank God he had that hand out of that glove, like, you know, to end that fight. But let me tell you, by the time it was all said and done, and this Royce Gracie was lifted with the win, everybody was like in shock. And I swear to God, man, it was like a Bruce Lee movie. At the end of it all, when that guy was lifted, everybody was looking at each other, man. It didn't matter if you were like kung fu guy, karate guy, judo guy. There was all of them there, man. All kinds of crazy styles that I like. Everybody was in there. Everybody stood up, Dave, and started cheering, man.
Right.
They were cheering this guy. They were like, what is this shit? And all I knew is the first time I got beat in a fight by a jiu-jitsu guy, and I didn't know it was jiu-jitsu at that point. All I remember was like, whatever this shit is, I better learn it. And then I heard it's Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I'm like, wait a sec, is that the same stuff like the Gracie? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, I better learn that shit. And that's how it all started, man. Gracie had such a huge influence, but yet he was not the best of the clan to represent, you know, the team on a world stage. It was incredible.
Kind of long.
But the amount, like,
how long after seeing that did you start training jiu-jitsu? It was a few years, right? Because it wasn't like it was available.
Listen, jiu-jitsu was still not around. There was guys that were saying they were jiu-jitsu, but it was the Japanese-style karate jiu-jitsu and that kind of stuff.
There was no Brazilian jiu-jitsu here.
No, there was no. So, but the closest I got to was I was doing Greco-Roman, and I was doing like some freestyle wrestling and whatnot. But this is a different world, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, man. Gi and no gi, man. It was just a different world. And to be able to get that, you know, as my experience, you know, it changed my whole philosophy and my whole way of looking at martial arts. And I've been doing this shit since I was like 7 years old. Yeah. But you got to remember, Dave, you know, there's a lot of people that were out there that once they saw Gracie win, it only made the hype bigger. People started coming out from all over the world saying, no, that guy can't be the champion. Look at the size of this guy and the muscles on that guy. How can that skinny little guy be able to be the best martial artist in the world? They're comparing him to Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris. And Chuck Norris was taking he wasn't going to go in there. Chuck knew better. He was, you know, I mean, this was a different world, you know? There were so many great martial artists on martial art magazines, but none of them took part of that. But you got guys from prisons, and you got guys from, like, gangs, and you had martial art masters and all this coming into UFC 2, coming to UFC 3, coming to UFC 4. And the king of the hill all the time, other than, I think it was 3, when Royce got poked in the eye and he couldn't see, which he would have still fought and won, by the way.
Yeah, after the chemo fight, he had to stop. But yeah, Royce was dominant, and you know, jiu-jitsu really, you know, Royce and the UFC in the early days really opened a lot of people's eyes, and Art Jimerson was definitely part of all of that history, and he has passed away at the age of 60, and that's why we're talking about the kind of early days of the UFC. I feel like jiu-jitsu, you know, Johnny North had a comment in the chat. He said, fast forward today, boxing always wins. And I think that, you know, there's an element there. He's making a point where the higher level strikers now in the UFC are having a lot of success. And I think that's because the striking is kind of catching up to everything else. And you kind of have to have everything else there with the striking now, too. I feel like the level of striking in the UFC has elevated over the years. We're seeing really clean technique, and that was always kind of a critique from the striking sports, like, oh, MMA guys don't really know how to kickbox or box or anything. But now you're seeing that kind of elevating that game, evolving in MMA. And it's not that jiu-jitsu has disappeared. We see people tap out all the time. What do you think that is? When you see a submission in the UFC, what do you think is going on there? That's jiu-jitsu. If you think that these guys aren't rolling, aren't doing jiu-jitsu, aren't practicing submission grappling, I mean, you're out of your mind. This is part of being a mixed martial artist at this point. You have to do jiu-jitsu, you have to box, you have to do all these things. But if you're not doing some jiu-jitsu, if you're not doing, you know, some submission grappling, whatever you want to call it, you're going to be in very big trouble in MMA. You just can't avoid it. Not something you can not know, you know? You need to be proficient in all of the martial arts, boxing, jiu-jitsu, everything. And the better you are at all the different aspects of the game, surprise, surprise, the better you are at fighting in general and the more you win, you know? If you have really, really good wrestling and really, really good jiu-jitsu and, like, okay striking, you could do pretty well in MMA, you know? I mean, I think Islam Makhachev is a good striker. I think Khabib was a good striker. But I don't think that they're, you know, Alex Pereira level. You know, it's a different level, different technique level, but their grappling and their jiu-jitsu, sambo, whatever you want to call it, their submission ability and their grappling and their wrestling, everything, you know, it's just so levels above everybody else that they were, you know, Khabib was dominant and Islam remains dominant. You know, the threat of the grappling opens up the striking a lot of the times too, right? Because a guy is so concerned about getting taken down, all of a sudden he gets kicked in the head, which is another advantage when you have such a deadly weapon with your grappling that people are just kind of, you know, hands down a little bit more, kind of protecting themselves, kind of looking for that shot, looking for the takedown, then all of a sudden they get punched in the face. Which is happening.
And you know what, Dave? Look, you know what's impressive? And you're talking about, like, jiu-jitsu. You look at a guy like Khabib. Yeah, he has amazing, like, Russian sambo, but he's also a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. You look at Pereira, man, in his last fight. He won, man. You know, he beat Jamel Hill. And what comes out? His black belt. I mean, did you see how active the guy was? I mean, he's one of the top strikers in the world. And here he is celebrating his BJJ black belt. People don't realize, you know, there's a reason. And, you know, and I always say this, wrestling opens the door, jiu-jitsu closes the door.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, they go hand in hand now in MMA. You could have got away with that stuff maybe back, like, you know, in the early 90s or whatnot, you know, with a lot of things. But nowadays, yeah, you got to be the best at everything. And boxing is catching up. When would you have thought a guy who has, like, no professional boxing fights walks into a boxing, you know, arena and wins? You know, we saw that with Nagano, even though he got knocked out. You know, we could say differently on his last fight when he fought Fury. But regardless, Conor McGregor still brought, like, you know, Mayweather to the end, literally.
Right.
You know, and you know, I have my ifs about that fight. But you got to remember that these guys right now, you know, are kind of like the older stages of MMA. Let's talk boxing and about the young guys that have been boxing. You know, everybody from, like, a Paddy Pimblett to whatever that are coming up, all these guys in their, like, their 20s are practicing boxing for a long time. And
I mean,
that's just the newer version. Wait till the
or
next
look
generation
at
comes.
Look at Max Holloway.
Well, is that a chain or what?
Look at Max Holloway and the evolution of his game. I mean, he started off pretty damn good, but he is the best he's ever been at 32 and one of the best in the world right now, and his boxing is so clean. Sean O'Malley at 135 is very, very sharp on his feet. There are some very good strikers in the UFC right now, but it doesn't mean they don't have jiu-jitsu too, because you have to have it, you know, like it's just you're not gonna succeed without it. It's something that everybody still needs, and that kind of was shown by Hoist, I think, in the beginning. He kind of showed like, yep, you need this is something that you need in your your weapon belt, you know, you got to have jiu-jitsu. And then people started realizing, you know, the wrestlers started overpowering people and just crushing people and ground and pound. It's like, oh, yeah, you need some pretty good wrestling, too. And then it's like, hey, if you can defend the takedown, you could start doing some pretty cool kicks and punches. And then people started adding that, you know. And that's how MMA has evolved, right? You have to have everything. And then you start looking at other techniques and you start saying, oh, well, this works and this works. And hey, Anderson Silva did a crane kick. That works. Let's try that. Notice no one does that anymore. For a while in MMA, everybody was throwing up that crane kick because Anderson did it and Lyoto did it, and it worked real well. And a lot of guys were throwing that kick straight up the middle. And what happened to that? Everybody was like, yeah, we don't do that anymore. We do calf kicks. There's trends in fighting, too. That's the thing about fighting that I think people and fighters and martial artists in general kind of get caught up in the trends. And then what winds up happening is you do what everybody else does, so they see what you do coming. They're seeing it coming because you're doing the same stuff. So I feel like sometimes you got to go back and go, hey, what worked before? Let's try some of those things. Let's bring some of those back. And then all of a sudden, what's old is new again. And I think people in MMA are going to start figuring that out as the sport evolves. But I feel like there are some techniques that aren't used as much as they were. Like, people don't dirty box as much as they used to. People don't throw that crane kick. There's a couple things that people don't do as much as they did. And I think that there's still effective techniques. And, of course, like, calf kicks in the past 5-6 years have really become a staple of everybody's game. Everybody's throwing a calf kick now, and people are figuring out different ways to defend it. Stance switching has become a new thing in MMA, where guys are getting so good at striking that they could do it from both sides. They could fight orthodox, they could fight southpaw, and they're switching stances seamlessly throughout a fight, which is really impressive.
That's a normal.
See, when I see, right, when you see guys doing that in MMA, that's bananas. And they're not doing it like to hide their lead leg because it's getting kicked. They're doing it to like give different looks and like confuse their opponent. That's really next level. And that's kind of where I think the sport is headed in the next 5 to 10 years, where everybody's going to have to do that. Because if your opponent can fight southpaw orthodox and is switching stances on you and you can't do that, you're going to be in trouble. So I feel like everybody in MMA is going to start figuring that one out, too. Not everybody does it, but the guys that do, you're like, ooh, they're excelling. They're doing well.
But I'll tell you something, Dave. You brought up a great point. And the thing is this, is that, you know, when you look at the early days when George was throwing that Superman punch, everybody started doing it, you know?
Yes.
And then we started to look, you know, the Superman punch, you know, the Steven Seagal clean kick. Yeah, and everybody started doing it, but it worked. But this stuff is nothing new. When you look at martial arts, if you look at, like, you know, kung fu and karate, these are, like, standard things that they've done. And, in fact, Conor brought back something that was done in kung fu for a long time, which was that shoulder roll hit. You remember he used to get on the inside and throw his shoulder?
Yeah.
And, you know, and he did some serious damage with that. The stomp kick, like, it's so primitive, but it's a basic technique that you use, you know, in basic, you want to call it street fighting, nothing worse than having your toes broken, right?
Yeah,
your, like the arc of your heel or your foot, like grazed or broken. These are all things that are part of martial arts. And the one thing I've noticed in the last couple of years is this, that I'm like, you know, John Jones does it beautifully. You know, Alex Pereira and Connor, you know, John Jones, like, you know, he brings out things of real traditional martial arts where you'd see it in that fight. And now I'm starting to see that in a lot more fighters. I'm starting to see the traditional martial arts coming out of the fights. Maybe, you know, like, most people won't recognize that, but I've seen some things where I'm like, man, they've become so good now that they can become a little bit more creative
yeah.
in the attacking wings.
Yeah.
And that's where you're starting to see, like traditional martial arts, which you thought you would have probably saw way back then, but you
yeah.
couldn't apply that shit back then because it was a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
Now you're able to fight because the angles, you know, it's not only the 8 degrees. Now it's opened up so much, man. Like, there's so many different angles and possibilities that you can become creative. But it just goes to show you the level of offense and defense of these fighters, man.
Yeah.
Female and male. And it's going to be something interesting. Like I said, boxing
you
is going to be so much better.
You are talking about, you know, fighters today and the evolution, but you are also describing Anderson Silva when you're talking about that. Like, that's why, to me, Anderson is, like,
Silva.
My greatest of all time. Anderson is just the greatest because he was just so ahead of his time, as a martial artist. You know, he could do it all. He could switch stances. He was throwing weird kicks. He was throwing stuff that you hadn't seen before. He had a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and was very, very good. And like, take him down. Like, you wanted to take him down because you didn't want to stand with him because he was a wizard. He was just ridiculous. Fast hands, great boxing, just another level. Well, not even another level, like 10 levels above the competition. It was crazy how much better he was than everybody that he fought. And the only reason that Anderson Silva isn't still middleweight champion is that, you know, time and age happened. But I think, you know, if Anderson was 25 years old today with the exact same skill set, he would still be dominating the game because he was just so ahead of his time and really kind of showed the path to all MMA fighters. Like, you got to have the Muay Thai and the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu down pat. And then when you have that, then you could start adding some funky shit, you know? And then you could really start going picking and choosing and being creative and finding different moves from here and there and studying with Steven Seagal if you want to. Like, you have options as a martial artist, but he was that good and he was that creative and he was that intelligent that he was able to figure all these things out and make just beautiful art in the octagon. And still, his fights are my favorite. Nobody had more impressive performances in the UFC than Anderson Silva. He was magic in there. He was the closest thing to Michael Jordan we've ever seen in MMA. Like, John Jones is probably the greatest fighter we have ever all time, but Anderson Silva was special. And I don't think John Jones exists without Anderson Silva. Those early days of John Jones, he was just copying what Anderson Silva was doing. He was doing, like, a very athletic, like, he didn't have the technique down of Anderson. Like, he wasn't doing the moves exactly. He just kind of, you could tell he was watching what Anderson was doing, and he's like, I could do that. And he was so athletic and impressive and amazing that he could, and he could pull these things off, but they were, like, a little weird and wild, but they always work because he was John Jones, and he was just, you know, I mean, he still is, right? Yeah. But Anderson was kind of the blueprint for what an MMA fighter could and will be. And currently, you know, a lot of guys are trying to be Anderson, chasing the spider.
Listen, man, Anderson Silva, what he did to Chael Sonnen just shows you, like, that guy is never out. They didn't call him the spider for no reason, man. Once you're in that net, you're done. But I'm going to say one thing about John Jones. Imagine if John Jones had a foundation of martial arts at 7, 8 years old. Imagine how much more dangerous this guy would have been. The only reason that John Jones is in MMA is because some guy found him in a gym, like, working out. And, you know, was like, are you interested in, like, you know, doing this kind of stuff? And he's like, why not? It just goes to show you how much of a natural athlete John Jones is. That guy there, man. Imagine if he would have been able to train like John Jones, Anderson Silva at an early age. I mean,
you know, the only reason John Jones is an MMA fighter is because he got his girlfriend pregnant in college and he had to make money. That's it.
There you go, man.
That's it.
It's crazy.
He didn't use protection. I mean, sex is the reason Jones is an MMA fighter. So are we really surprised that the path that his, you know, career has taken and his whole life is that, like, the reason he's a fighter? He didn't decide to do it. He was just like, oh, I need to make money. I'm a wrestler. I guess I'll try this fighting thing. And then he was very good at it. And he's like, oh, that was easy. It was ridiculous. Like, he'd go in there, he'd punch a guy a few times, they would fall down, and then they would hand him some cash. And it was like, well, any dude would be like, yeah, sure, I'll do this more. Like, it's kind of a cool story, you know? It's like, I'm kind of in trouble here. I don't know what to do. Hey, how about fighting? Yeah, okay, I'm a wrestler. I guess I could. Then he goes in and just crushes people. And he's like, well, I guess I'm good at this. And he becomes the greatest ever.
Is that insane, man? It's insane.
It is crazy. If you think about it, like, he was a junior college wrestler, gets his girlfriend pregnant. Somebody goes, try fighting in local fights. He's like, yeah, okay. Rest is history.
And that's where it started. But you see how things lined up, Dave. If everything didn't line up for him to be that way, we would never know John Jones as of what he is today.
Yeah.
You know, probably going to be the greatest fighter in the UFC, you know, if he... You know, he walks away with the win and another fight, which I think might happen, but you just don't know destiny.
He'll walk away with all the wins that he needs to. Like, I don't think he's done after Stipe. It seems like he's willing to take another fight. I think that fight's going to be Pereira. I think it's going to be a gigantic fight. I'm going to throw a prediction out here. I think he fights Stipe in November. At Madison Square Garden, and that's the big John Jones comeback fight. And then he's going to fight Alex Pereira next July, International Fight Week in Vegas. And then he'll walk away without any doubt as the greatest of all time. Because I believe that he'll not only beat Stipe, he'll also beat Pereira. And if they really want him to stick around, and if Aspinall can pull off a few wins between now and next July... Maybe there'll be a reason for John Jones to beat Tom Aspinall, too. But I don't know. Right now, I don't think Aspinall is that guy. I don't think he's built up a big enough name, a big enough following for John Jones to really fight him. I think that, you know, if John Jones is going to fight somebody past Stipe, because it seemed like he was just going to fight Stipe and retire, but... Maybe he wants a little bit more. I think he'll probably beat Stipe easily if that fight ever does happen. I hope it will. I think it will. And then he'll fight Alex Pereira, and he'll beat him. And then if Aspinall has done enough, like, Aspinall is going to need to get on his horse here and start fighting people. Stop waiting around for John Jones. I'm talking about John Jones, Tom Aspinall. No one's looking for that. If John Jones is going to fight somebody other than Stipe, we want it to be Pereira. We don't want it to be Tom Aspinall. Pereira is the guy that main events at UFC 300. Pereira is the double champ. Pereira is the guy who was middleweight champ, light heavyweight champ. Pereira beat Israel Adesanya. Israel Adesanya is one of the top stars in all of the UFC. Pereira is the guy that is on top of the light heavyweight division. Tom Aspinall is the interim champion. Interim. They're putting him on a pay-per-view in front of his own people. And then they're sticking it at 3 in the morning local time in England. Come on now. Tom Aspinall is not the guy to fight John Jones. It's Alex Pereira. After Stipe, Pereira is the star. If Tom Aspinall wants to fight John Jones, he's got to start beating people that people care about. The problem is, for Aspinall, who is that heavyweight that people care about right now? Who do you want to see? He already beat Sergey, what's his face? And he went away pretty quick. He dropped off the face of the earth. No one's looking for him anymore. Yeah. Curtis Blaydes, I think that's the next fight. Curtis Blaydes does not move the needle. He's not a guy that has been a big draw for the UFC. He's a good fighter. If you're an MMA fan, you know exactly who he is, and you respect him as a mixed martial artist. He's good. He could beat Tom Aspinall. He's got the skills. But come on now. That's not a big fight. Tom Aspinall versus Curtis Blaydes sounds like a Fight Night main event. But it's going to main event a pay-per-view. And that's, you know, that's cool. It's cool by me. I get it. However, beating Curtis Blaydes does not put you on the radar to fight John Jones. And I'm not sure who does at heavyweight. Unless you could find a way, Tom Aspinall, to figure out a fight with Alex Pereira between now and then. If Tom Aspinall can get on the same card as John Jones and Stipe and fight Alex Pereira on that thing, or the month before or the month after type deal, you know what I mean? If they could do Aspinall-Pereira for the heavyweight title, interim heavyweight title, whatever you want to call it, Pereira moves up to heavyweight. He fights Aspinall. If Aspinall can beat him, then we're talking. Then it's like, okay, well, Pereira's out of the running. It's Aspinall's game or nothing. So then I think Aspinall has a shot at fighting John Jones. Until then, forget about it. I can't picture a single man at heavyweight that I care to see fight. Like, who is a guy at heavyweight that you're like, oh, this guy, watch out, it's going to be... Like, the heavyweight division right now has zero star power. There's no big-ticket heavyweights in the game currently in the UFC. Tom Aspinall is a champion at a garbage time. It's really unfortunate for him, but if you look around at the UFC heavyweight division, it's a bunch of guys that have wins and losses, and nobody's really on a streak, and nobody's really a name, and nobody's talking. They don't have a guy that talks that's interesting. You know, Daniel Cormier is gone. Brock Lesnar is gone. Francis Ngannou is gone.
Yeah.
What's left?
There's nothing left.
I'm telling you. Listen to the top 10 heavyweights. You want to hear some big names? John Jones is the champion, of course. Tom Aspinall, interim champion. Number two, okay, you're going to get excited about this. We forgot about him. I'm surprised you're not throwing his name out there, AJ.
Oh, Ciryl Gane.
Okay. Number two, ranked heavyweight. Okay, so he's kind of fun, but
he's already been beat.
Yeah, exactly. Sergey Pavlovich, already been beat. Curtis Blaydes, he's up next. Stipe Miocic is ranked fifth.
Yeah, that's pretty... And he hasn't fought in how many years?
Hold on. Let me check, because I don't want to disparage the man, because I love him. But he's 41 years old and has not fought since a knockout loss to Francis Ngannou in March of 2021. He has not fought in over 3 years, and he is still the fifth-ranked heavyweight according to the UFC's own rankings. Sorry, Tom Aspinall. It's really sad for you, brother, but you got nobody to fight. Call out some WWE guys. It might be interesting, you know? They'd be like, Bobby Lashley. You know, I mean, just go for... I mean, you need names. You need something. Brock Lesnar isn't doing anything but hunting right now. Maybe he wants to fight you. Honestly, try your luck. If I'm Tom Aspinall, I'm calling out any big person that exists on planet Earth. If you can make 265 weight limit and you look kind of mean and tough, and you have a name behind you, Tom Aspinall should be calling you out. Because the guys that he's going to fight at heavyweight aren't going to make a name, aren't going to help him move the needle, aren't going to sell pay-per-views for the UFC. Alexander Volkov, Gilton Almeida, Marcin Tybura, ranked 8th, Sergey Spivak at 9, Tai Tuivasa, still hanging around in the top 10 at number 10. This guy's still hanging around in the top 10. Derek Lewis, who by all accounts is donezo, is 12 right now in the world. His opponent this weekend, Rodrigo Nascimento, is 15.
That's crazy.
Yep. I'm telling you, man. People don't realize how weak the UFC's heavyweight division is. It is so thin. It's so thin. Well, I mean, it was never super strong. It's always been a weak division. It goes to highs and lows. Once in a while, you have two or three stars in it, but usually it's pretty weak. It's been historically weak. Like, Cain Velasquez was champion. Yeah. They stuck Junior Dos Santos in there three times because he had nobody else to fight. He had, like, Gabriel Gonzaga and Bigfoot Silva. Cool. Like, he had nobody to fight. You know what I mean? When Cain was there, it was like, oh, I guess Junior's back up next because they got – he's just beating everybody. Overeem was around. Yeah, I guess Overeem. I mean, you know, Brock Lesnar was there. I mean, there were some times where things were good, but then those guys went away, and then things were bad again.
Yeah, we need
things
to get
are bad now.
Young. We need to find new young blood, man. There's got to be some like monster Dagestanians out there, man, that are in the heavyweight. I mean, we saw one of them that didn't do too well, but yeah, they need to, you know. And I like Tom Aspinall. I think that Tom Aspinall is very dangerous. I think it could be very competitive, but we need to get another pack of wolves, man, in that division. And Dana White has to start going out around the world and finding some of these heavyweights, man, and start bringing them to the UFC. Like, now is the time. Because once John Jones goes, Barrera, we don't know if he'll make it to heavyweight. I think he will, but it's still a question mark. And Tom Aspinall, man, if anything happens to him, like physically, God forbid, you know, something could happen. There's no one really there. When you're mentioning some of those names, man, look, I think Cyril Gane, was one of the prospects that I called, before the UFC. I knew he was going to make it to the championship, fight.
Yeah.
And I was close. You know, we lost Ngannou. Thinking, man.
Big loss.
A big loss, man. And I hope the UFC could find some way.
PFL contract, man. Back. I'm telling you, they can't do it. It's a weak division. The point is, Aspinall, no matter who he fights in it, it's not going to do him any favors. He can fight these guys all day. It's not going to make him a bigger star, and I don't think he's going to get that fight to take on John Jones unless he can get a fight with Pereira if Pereira wants to move up to heavyweight and fight him for the interim belt, which could be appealing for Pereira. He could be the first ever three-division champion in the UFC. No one's ever done it. It's a cool fight, and maybe they'll do it, but, that's what Aspinall better hope for. Like, no wonder Aspinall's calling out John Jones. He knows that's the only payday he can get. That's the payday fight. Man. That's everything for him. If he doesn't get that, he's got to look at the division and go, damn, there's jack shit left. Stipe's ranked fifth. So nobody should, I don't want to hear any argument about, well, Stipe, why is he getting a shot at John Jones? He hasn't fought and da-da-da. He's ranked fifth. There's nobody else, okay? I don't want to hear any of that.
You're right.
Ridiculous.
You're absolutely
of course
right.
I'm right. I know. I always am. I know about MMA. I watch this
stuff. But that's what I'm saying is that, like, it's also very dangerous if you got Jones fighting like Pereira and that fight happens and say Jones wins, he walks away. You've got Pereira with a loss who might just drop down in, like, you know, weight loss. You just got Tom Aspinall. So you
exactly.
In the next couple of years, you kind of start, like, finding some really talented heavyweights out there because there's going to be a big hole, man. And heavyweights brings in the crowds, man. There's no doubt about it. We've seen that in boxing, and we see that in the UFC.
Yeah.
You know,
they need heavyweights. But, they really do. I wish the heavyweight division was stronger because a nice, strong, healthy heavyweight division is really great. And the UFC, it's always gone up and down. And again, we're in a down period, and I can't believe it. It sucks, but we are in a down period of heavyweights. It seemed like Ngannou and everything was bringing in a new era, John Jones coming up, but it's stale again, and it's really unfortunate for Tom Aspinall, who's a very good heavyweight, who's got charisma,
very
who could
talented.
Be a star for the UFC, but he needs some dancing partners. He needs some guys to fight, and it's just not working
right
for him.
Fella, man.
We're going to talk about a big heavyweight fight this weekend in St. Louis. AJ, I do have a question for you. Shout out to Angelo on the chat, by the way. Angelo, a member over at join.ringsidereport.net. DJ Bourne in the chat, Mika in the chat, Miss Brooklyn Lizard in the chat, Johnny North, of course, my man in the chat. DJ Bourne says,
"Great,
go Kendrick." Hey, AJ.
You know.
Do you know who Drake is currently doing rap beef with? Do you know who the rapper is that he is facing? Are you aware of any of this?
I am aware of it because I keep seeing it like popping up on my social feeds. Like it's just like out of control and you talking about it all the time. So I know what's going on. I know that Drake's bodyguard got shot, you know, and I'm surprised that Drake is in some kind of feud.
With
Kendrick.
Kendrick.
DJ, don't get mad at me, man.
Kendrick.
DJ Ford, I need your help.
What's his last name?
Lamar.
Hey.
Not bad, eh? Not bad. But listen, I'm
now saying they not like us.
I think it's insane, man.
They not like us. They not like us. Huh?
I don't know, man. Put these guys in like, this is when you get Jake Paul against Tyson, and then you get Kendrick Lamar versus Drake in a boxing match. This is how you settle it, man.
Okay. First of all, Drake has lost. Drake has lost. Kendrick is the winner. I'm declaring it. Officially, Ringside Report Network is declaring Kendrick Lamar the winner of the beef. Kendrick is the best. He's number one. K-Dot, we love you. Also, what? Drake has been making a lot of short jokes about Kendrick, making a lot of short references. So I got to stick up for Kendrick, for the short guys, for the, you know, under 6 foot gentleman, you know, he's making fun of Kendrick for being shorter. And so,
but hung like an elephant.
Yeah. But so if Drake is talking all that garbage, you want to talk the mess to all, you know, say short jokes to Kendrick, say them to me, Drake. Drake's talking about handing out ass whoopings. Hand out an ass whooping to me, Drake. I don't think Drake could actually fight. I'm going to stick up for Kendrick as well. If Drake wants to throw it down, I'm in Montreal. You say you got Montreal connects, Drake. I'll fight you here, man. Come to 514 and see what's up. I will beat up Drake easily. I like Drake, though. I don't want to fight him. I like him. I think that Family Matters song was real good, though, too. I really like that. I've been playing it a lot.
Listen, man, I loved him in Degrassi. I think he was great, Drake, man.
No, Drake is cool. But I just hear Drake talking about beating people up. I'm like, who are you beating up, Drake? What are you talking about, man? Come beat me up. Try that. Drake's not fighting. Drake's talking about fighting and stuff. I hear him talking about fighting, and I'm like, man, this guy's not fighting. What is this rapper talking about fighting? I know what Drake is up to. Kendrick told me. Kendrick told me what Drake is up to. He's not fighting. Drake. Kendrick has won. Destruction.
So let me get this.
Destruction.
So let me get this.
And we're energized.
So let me get this, because like I don't know how you came to the conclusion that he won, but you're saying through a song you were able to determine who the winner was.
Several songs, many songs.
You gotta break it down for me, dude, in layman terms one day, just so I can figure out and I can come to like the conclusion.
I'd have to play some songs for you. I'd have to play you some music and explain to you a lot of different things that have happened over the years. Between two gentlemen.
We gotta get DJ Bourne. Listen, we gotta get DJ Bourne on air, man, and let him break it down. Oh, I just saw something come in.
Drake's best friend is leader of Hell's Angels. Wow. Is that true, DJ Bourne? Who are we talking about?
Man, he's talking about the Quebecois, man. I know.
Yeah, well, when he's talking about Montreal Connects and that type of thing, he's talking about like yeah, some gangster people for sure. And he's shown, the thing is too, Drake, yeah, he's got a lot of money and money can make things happen, right? So I've also seen on his like Instagram, Drake posted like some motorcycles that he has because he's got like a lot of vehicles because he's a rich rapper, right? But in his garage, he has some motorcycles, and on each of the motorcycles, there's a sticker that says support your local Hell's Angels Toronto. And I don't think you get those stickers free in the mail. I don't think they send them to everybody. I think that's the type of thing where maybe you're,
yeah, I don't think
you know?
Get it on like Amazon or something.
Yeah, you can't get that on Amazon. I think Drake is getting that from some people. Yeah, and there are Hells Angels in Toronto, and there are definitely Hells Angels in Montreal. And if Drake is playing with gangster type people in Canada, then he's definitely rubbing elbows with some Hells Angels. That's just, you know, part of the game. If you're going to be in a gangster type way, hanging out with gangster type people, you're a rich guy, there's going to be Hells Angels around if you're in Toronto. If you're in Montreal, it's going to happen. So I'm not surprised that Drake knows Hells Angels, but also Kendrick Lamar knows some Bloods in Compton or Bompton, as those guys say. So it's like, you know, there's some, you know, pretty rough characters on all sides of the world. There, you know, people are trying to dismiss Canadians being like, oh, Drake's Canadian soft, da-da-da. And I'm like, well, hang on here, guys. I'm Canadian, too, and I know what goes on here, and it's not as soft as you might think, right? Like, people have this impression of Canada of, like, soft, polite, da-da-da, but Montreal and stuff, like, you know, it's a port city. Things happen. So, you know, the international crime syndicates operate out of Canada as well. And they're far-reaching, and things happen. But the Drake shooting, the shooting of the bodyguard, is not a part of this Kendrick Lamar thing. It seems to be something with The Weeknd. You know the singer, The Weeknd?
What?
Yeah, they're
confusing.
They're both, like, Toronto area guys. And I think they're some of Drake's friends and some of Weeknd's friends. They have, you know, they have record labels, and they don't like each other. And apparently Weeknd's manager's house was in California, was shot at a couple weeks ago, and people are saying that this is retaliation for that. So there's, like, Drake versus Weeknd beef that seems to have escalated into violence, but because all this Kendrick stuff is overshadowing it, people are like, oh, it's Kendrick doing this, and da-da-da, and I'm like, I don't think this is the doing of Kendrick Lamar. It seems more like, oh, this Weeknd thing might be heating up, and it's kind of bad. So yeah, I hope no one gets hurt. I think it's pretty awful when all that happens. But I will say, you know, I think Kendrick would be fine going to Toronto. I don't think anyone would mess with him. But Drake going to California right now would not be a good idea. So I really hope that Drake stays away from California, stays away from the West Coast, does not go there, because people, rappers, get killed in California. It happens. Pop Smoke went out to California. He died. Biggie went out to California. Bad idea. He died. His mother said, don't go to California. He said, it'll be okay. It was not okay. So please, Drake, please, Drake, as you know, you get off that plane, you're not safe in L.A. Just don't go to L.A. right now. I don't want to see Drake get shot and killed in Los Angeles. That would be horrible for the world and for rap. And I don't even think Kendrick wants that. You know,
it's not even good for the UFC.
No, it would be.
Drake puts a lot of money on UFC matches, and we have to always, like, look at what Drake puts down, and we always got to, like, you know, we can't have Drake down. That's,
like,
for sure, man.
Drake not able to sell out arenas anymore. Drake being, like, a smaller act. Drake's career taking a downturn. That's fine.
What?
The Drake getting shot and killed, like, that's too far. I don't want to see that. But I do think that Drake right now is in a moment where it could take a turn. Like, you know, at one point in rap history, AJ, MC Hammer was the biggest rapper in the world. He was the number one act, selling out arenas everywhere he went. He was the biggest thing ever. And then he basically disappeared, and he's not really remembered in hip-hop as, like, a great rapper that people go back and listen to like so many other rappers are. So I feel like, is this a MC Hammer-type moment for Drake? Is this, like, a Ja Rule-type moment? At one point, Ja Rule was, like, the biggest rapper in the game, and then 50 Cent came along and rapped a lot of mean things to Ja Rule, and then Ja Rule's career took a serious downturn, and it was really never the same, not even close. Ja Rule tried to fight back and do diss songs to 50 and Eminem, and it really didn't go well for him. He got obliterated, and then he was, you know, I mean, he kind of disappeared for a long time until that Fyre Festival debacle. Like, Ja Rule kind of, you know, fell off completely. So this could be that moment for Drake where he's getting Ja Ruled, and, you know, Kendrick is playing that 50 Cent role because Kendrick is bullying him on these records. He is crushing him, and Drake is not looking good in a number of different ways. Drake fans now are going to come under question. Like, who are you supporting? What are you doing? What's going on with you that you're supporting Drake? You know, it's like a whole other thing now. When your man is being accused of being a pedophile and all this stuff, and you're supporting him and his defense is, I'm too famous to do that. And then the evidence is like, doot, 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 doot. And you see it on the internet and you're like, well, it's not quite evidence, but there's a lot of suspicious stuff going on with Drake. Why is Drake texting all these young ladies that are under 18? Is it innocent or what else is happening? You know, like there's a lot going on with Drake that like, you know, was kind of under the radar for a while, but now it's being brought up by Kendrick and you go, oh yeah, if you add all that stuff up together, it's like I'd heard about this, this, and this, but then if you add those couple other facts that I didn't know about, and then if you add them all together and you put them in a timeline, you go, ooh, whoa, what is happening here? What's really going on with Drake? Who is he dating? The news, a lot of women, but like, are they all over 18? What is happening? And he's like, I'm too famous, I'd get arrested. And you're like, well, would you though? Because a lot of really famous guys go on for years doing sex crimes and they don't get arrested. Eventually it happens, but not all of them, I would guess. So I don't know. His defense has been real weak. And Kendrick's verses have been real strong, and that last song was real good, and all the songs have been really solid, and, you know, Drake's songs have been good too, but not as good. It's been a wild time in rap music, AJ. It's been a really wild time. It's been fun.
Man, I'm in shock. It's like too complicated for me, man. This is like very complicated, dude. I listen to music just for the music, but like there's a whole storyline behind it's like, it's too much for me, man.
Rap is a sport.
Like, you know,
it's a sport. It's an art, and it's like a sport. It's sports entertainment. Rap is sports entertainment. Rap and wrestling are very similar in many ways. Many ways.
That. You know?
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, AJ. You could stick to fighting. You stick to fighting. That's what you're good at. We had UFC St. Louis coming up this weekend. It is Derek Lewis versus Rodrigo Nascimento. Rodrigo is 31 years old, coming off 3 straight victories, all by decision in the UFC. He's got an 11-1 record. That one, though, a knockout loss to Chris Daukaus, who's a guy that Derek Lewis did knock out. What does that mean? What does that mean for this fight? Derek Lewis, always dangerous. His last fight with Jailton Almeida, he got completely out-wrestled. But I'm not sure that Nascimento will be looking to play the same game. Is he going to be looking to wrestle Derek Lewis? Is he going to be looking to take him down? Or is he going to be looking to stand up and trade with Derek Lewis? Because if he is, over 5 rounds, could get dangerous. Derek Lewis, always dangerous. The favorite, minus 160, is Derek Lewis. Nascimento, plus 140, the dog. Interesting fight.
Man,
it's a really interesting fight. Nascimento's younger. He's on a win streak. Lewis has lost a lot of his fights recently, but he didn't look terrible in that Almeida fight. He just, his takedown defense isn't there. But if you're not trying to take him down, yikes.
Listen, man, Derek Lewis is 1-4 in his last 5 fights. He had that flying knee that he knocked out, what's his name, in 30 seconds. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Derek Lewis is actually better than ever.
It was Rogério de Lima.
Flying knee.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was beautiful, man. And the height that Derek Lewis took was incredible. When you see a man that big, like fly in the air like he does, people don't realize that being that big doesn't mean you're slow. Derek Lewis, like, proves that otherwise. The thing with Derek Lewis is that he's looked amazing in his last, like, fights. He's in the best condition ever, in my opinion. He's looking great, strong. I think he's just trying to readjust his body. But let's not forget, the guy has the most KOs in UFC history. And that's one thing you can't forget. Because the one thing with Nascimento, okay, he beat Dontayle Mays. He barely beat him. And we know Dontayle, Dave. It's like sometimes you're like, what? He barely beat him. And he won his two biggest fights by a split decision. So it kind of went either or. The one thing he doesn't have is knockout power. And his clinch game isn't great. So if Derek Lewis grabs you in the clinch game, you are done because you know that flying knee is coming right up. I think this is not going to go five rounds. I think this is going to be a fast fight. They don't have the cardio, both of them, to go five rounds. That means that someone is going to get knocked out. It'll probably end in the first, I'd say, the first three rounds, someone's going down. And I think Derek Lewis, man, even though he's been 1-4, looking a lot better in physical shape than he's ever had, I think it's coming down to his last fights. And I think, you know, I love Derek Lewis, man. This guy is, you know, brought such an exciting part to the heavyweight division. You know, outside the octagon, inside the octagon, the guy is a character, man. And I'd love to see, like, Derek Lewis, like, be part of the UFC after his career is over. But I think on this fight here, man, he's got that main event, man. If he wins, man, I could see Derek Lewis, like, wrapping it up. And this would be, like, a fitting way for him to go because he doesn't have much left in that tank, dude. And I don't want to see Derek Lewis get hurt. But, you know, I don't want to see Rodrigo get hurt either. But I think he has enough to beat, like, Rodrigo. I think this is a fight for Derek Lewis to win or a fight for Derek Lewis to lose. You know, I think, I really believe that will probably be his last fight. We'll see on Saturday night. But I'm going with Derek Lewis for the knockout.
He has said he's talking to the WWE about doing something, which would be real interesting. I could see that.
That we can see, man.
Yeah.
That's a great way to step into another career, man. He can do it.
I could see him being successful. He could definitely talk. He's got a personality. You know, it just depends on can he wrestle, which is... Wrestling and MMA are two different sports, and when you're starting your training at 39 years of age, I don't know. It's kind of tough to take on pro wrestling and start at 39, but maybe a match or two here and there. You know, it doesn't have to be full time, but he could definitely try it. I think he's a good personality. AJ, I want to get right into it. I want to get to the parlays for this card. Let's
do it.
Let's stop messing around here. Do you have a parlay for me?
Yeah, I'll go through it. Like, I'll go through what I think is going to come through.
Mm-hmm.
I think Derek Lewis is going to win.
Yeah.
You can either go with the parlay or, like, the straight win.
No, give me a parlay. I want your AJ parlay. Team AJ, this is what it's time for. Team Fred won, by the way, last week at UFC 301.
He did. Team Fred, man.
Pantoja and Jose Aldo was his parlay, and they won. Aldo won a comeback fight, upset. Nice win for Jose Aldo. Happy for him.
Yeah, beautiful, man. I knew Jose Aldo, man. I'm telling you. But you got to give it to the Australian. He did well, man, in that fight. So he's not out of that division.
Urseg, you mean. Pantoja and Urseg. Yeah, the Australian Urseg. Yeah. Okay, stick with the parlay. So, Lewis, you're going with Lewis. How about Buckley and Nursultan Ruziboev? I like Nursultan in this fight, AJ. I think Nursultan is coming through. Yeah.
No, man. Look at Buckley, man. Since he's moved, like, to welterweight, he's been 3-0. And he's coming off an impressive win against Luka. And don't forget that. He's fighting a smaller guy. Buckley in this division, this is where he needs to be. He's going to be dangerous, man. The only advantage Ruziboev has is on the ground. Other than that, man, Buckley is going to turn him into mixed meat. And I'm going to go with
Nursultan, just to tell you, Nursultan Ruziboev, 30 years old from Uzbekistan, has won 10 in a row, including two straight in the UFC. He's new to the UFC. He's won 10 in a row, all finishes, submissions and knockouts, a variety. He's a dangerous man, AJ. Don't sleep on Nursultan. Don't sleep on the Uzbeks. Here comes Nursultan.
But Buckley, man, in welterweight, man, he's 3-0.
I know.
And he looks impressive. Every fight, he looks better.
He does.
We can't throw out the Buckley.
Okay.
You have a cough. You grab that Buckley.
Nursultan. Ruziboev. Okay. Yeah. First round also. By the way, all the wins, all the finishes in the first round.
What?
Yeah.
For really, yeah, I know, but it was like some of them were a bit weird, his wins, but yeah, yeah, okay.
All first round finishes. Yeah.
But Buckley is going to, like, I'm telling you, you know, Buck, this is his division, man.
Okay.
And then I'm going to go with Carlos Ullberg.
Yes, Ullberg from Australia, mate. Yeah. Or New Zealand.
Weird.
He's from New Zealand. He's a Kiwi. All right. I like Ullberg in that fight, too, over Menafield. What else you got, AJ? Are you done yet, or is that it?
No, I'm going to go with Matthias Rebecki.
Rebecki minus 475 over Diego Ferreira.
Are you over a year and a half, and he knocked out Michael Johnson in his return.
Yeah.
But other than that, man, it's going to be hard, man.
How about Bruce Leroy?
Stop Rebecki's takedown.
Bruce Leroy, Alex Caceres, plus 170, taking on Sean Woodson, minus 210.
Yeah, man, I like Bruce Lee Caceres, but
I do.
Yeah, it is going to be a tough. Both are good strikers. You know, they're unpredictable. This could be an either or fight, but you know what? Oh man, you know, let me just check one thing, Dave.
I like Bruce Leroy in this fight. I think Bruce Leroy, Alex Caceres is going to win this one. Plus 170, I think, is good money on him.
The thing that he has is the experience, man. He's got, like, 21-14, man. You know, 35 fights in the UFC. But Sean Woodson, he's 11-1-1. I mean, this guy is on a tear. And every time you see this guy fight, he is impressive. You know, the thing with Alex, he's on and cold, man. If he comes in and he's impressive, he's going to win. But this is a very unpredictable fight, but I don't know. Man, this is tough.
I think Caceres is a better striker. I think he moves around and beats him with a decision.
But so is Sean Woodson, man.
I think Caceres is better, though.
His reach is a lot. Like, you got a 198-centimeter reach to 186 for Alex Caceres. So if they go to the striking game, I think Sean Woodson is going to be able to outstrike him.
Okay, so who do we got?
Woodson for me, dude. Without Sean.
Sean Woodson. Okay. AJ is going with the wood once again. Is that it? Team AJ parlay done. Right? Five fight parlay? You good?
Oh, man, you know what?
What? You're switching back to Bruce Lee. Switching.
No, I'm not going to go. I can't do it, dude.
Why don't you just skip that fight altogether because you can't pick a winner? How about that? It's a more confident parlay if you just skip it because you're so torn.
You know what? It's not that I'm torn. I think, like, you know, the reach is going to make the difference, man. They're both good strikers.
Just go with Bruce Leroy.
I'm just saying is that I didn't really dig deep into, like, looking at this fight and dissecting it like I usually do. Just looking at them, like, you know, briefly, like, if I had to go on a whim, I'd go with Sean Woodson on this.
Okay. So AJ is going with Sean Woodson, and here is AJ's parlay. Finally. My God. Mateus.
Brandy's on here.
No, we don't have. You're going overtime again. Mateus Rebecki, minus 475. Sean Woodson, minus 210. Joaquin Buckley, minus 130. Derek Lewis, minus 160. Carlos Ullberg, minus 250. It's a five-fight parlay. 20 gets you 143.85 at bet99.com. Use our promo code bet99.ringsidereport.net.
How much was that? 195?
Well, 20 gets you
143.85. 143. Okay. I don't know what I heard there.
You want me to take a picture of it and see it on the group chat, AJ? I'll do that for you.
Yeah, we need to do all that kind of stuff again.
I'll give you your whole parlay there.
Buckley.
I'm sending you two pictures to send to do the parlay, AJ, because it's a big parlay. It's a very big, elaborate parlay.
No,
once again, from our boy, AJ D'Alessio. And now, Team Dave is on the clock. What are you saying to me?
We should do a rap battle. I just thought about it, man.
I think you'd lose.
I'm going to get DJ Bourne on my side, man. How can I lose?
but I just want to go one-on-one with you. What are you, Drake? Well, you get other people to write your raps for you? I'm like Kendrick Lamar. I write my own.
No, no, no. You know what we'll do? We'll get DJ to be like the judge and see which one wins, man. I go old school. You go new school.
Okay. I'm going to give you a really simple parlay because I want to keep it simple this weekend. It's a two-fight parlay.
Oh, no. Don't tell me. Don't go against Buckley.
Nur Sultan Ruziboev.
Oh, no.
Nur Sultan is the truth, AJ. Here he comes. And I'm going with Nur Sultan and Ulberg 20 gets you 58.80 over at bet99.ringsidereport.net. How do you like them apples?
I can't believe you went against Buckley, man.
Well, I went with Nur Sultan. That's going to be the fight of the weekend, my friend. Nur Sultan, Ruziboev. Co-main event of UFC St. Louis coming up this Saturday in St. Louis. And I'll be back here tomorrow night with my good friend Johnny North to talk professional wrestling, all the wrestling talk you can handle, everything happening in AEW, WWE, and beyond. We've got so much going on. Right, you were at Johnny's wrestling match last weekend.
Hey, listen, can I just say 2 seconds on that? Because I did a promo with Marco there about Johnny's fight that he got robbed. I just got to tell you one thing. I was very impressed with the whole setup, man. So hats off to Torture Chamber. The event was like, there were so many people in there, dude. It was ridiculous. It was packed.
Yeah.
They had everything, man. It was really like pro looking. Like,
nice.
Like being in there, like, you know, he really like, they really got over the top, man. So good job to Drew Onyx. But I got to tell you, man, Johnny,
super chin.
You know, Johnny was looking amazing, man, but then he got trapped into this, like, into the ropes, and he got messed up. But Johnny fought a great fight, and I'll tell you one thing, man, I was proud, man. I was saying, that's a ringside report right there. Okay, we lost, but you know what? At least we didn't get shot at.
That's right. Ringside report. At least we didn't get shot at. And that is the program for you tonight. I'll be back once again with Johnny North. And that'll be a great time. And he will tell you more about the match tomorrow night and everything else going on in Johnny North world. Angelo Contagonis dropping a super chat. Thank you, Angelo. You're the super chat leader of the night. Shout out to Lior as well, member of the team over at join.ringsidereport.net. Join.ringsidereport.net and membership.ringsidereport.net is where you go to support the Ringside Report Network. And you can go to our website, ringsidereport.net, for all sorts of exclusive stuff that you don't even have here on YouTube, on Twitch, on Twitter, on all the things. You don't have that. It's only at ringsidereport.net. So go there and check out all the stuff that we have there. And yeah, that's it. I'll be back tomorrow night with Johnny North right here on the Ringside Report Network. Thanks for sticking with us to the end. We would really appreciate it if you could help us spread the word. Please share this episode on whichever social media platform you use. Add a comment below and consider reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. We are an audience-supported network, so consider becoming a recurring supporter at membership.ringsidereport.net. Check out our website at ringsidereport.net. Hope to see you again next time and have a good night.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.